Erie to Harrisburg, Indiana to Philadelphia, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania is poised to be a world leader in the rapidly growing field of artificial intelligence. A plan is now before Congress to ease the path. Taylor Barkley from the Abundance Institute is here with details. September is Healthy Aging Month. To learn more, Joe Geiger has Dr. Valerie Fuller from the American Association of Nurse Practitioners in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And with the state budget nearing 3 months overdue and a federal government shutdown looming, Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania offers some common sense budget reforms on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Taylor Barkley of the Abundance Institute in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. While the Pennsylvania Supreme Court delays ruling on Governor Shapiro's ongoing quest to impose the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, several leading labor leaders are speaking out against the agreement, which has resulted in the loss of family-sustaining union jobs. Michael Stanton and Sean Steffi, who is president of the South Central Building Trades Council, write in Real Clear Pennsylvania that Shapiro's continuing support of REGI is, quote, baffling, and would impose a carbon tax that would be felt by residents and businesses alike. A prominent statewide elected official has declared that he is not running for president. No, not Governor Josh Shapiro. U.S. Senator Dave McCormick was asked the question during a recent forum in Politico and said that he is not running for president in 2028, nor in 2032, for that matter. McCormick said he has had a successful private sector career and that his service in the U.S. Senate is, quote, the penultimate chapter in his political life. National Democrats are beginning to pour money into what is normally a sleepy state Supreme Court retention election. However, three Democrat justices are up for a yes or no retention vote this November, and they hold the balance of power on the high court. They have used that power to, among other things, impose by judicial fiat a congressional district map that is gerrymandered in favor of Democrats. Groups aligned with Democrats have booked more than $3 million in television advertising in a bid to keep the activist justices on the Supreme Court. Republican groups are engaged in a Vote No campaign, but so far lag in spending. U.S. Senator John Fetterman continues to display his independent streak, arguing this past week that Democrats need to, quote, change their tune when it comes to attacking President Donald Trump. In the wake of the assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk, Fetterman said the time has come to turn the temperature down and stop referring to people and comparing them to notorious figures in history, such as Adolf Hitler. Fetterman said his party needs to focus more on ideas and not simply be opposed to Donald Trump. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Earlier this year, U.S. Senator Dave McCormick convened an Energy and Innovation Summit in Pittsburgh with over $90 billion worth of investment in the sectors being announced. But can the government get out of the way of such growth? U.S. Senator Ted Cruz has proposed legislation to remove government roadblocks. Taylor Barkley is director of public policy at the Abundance Institute. He has details on the senator's proposal. Taylor, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Taylor, the term artificial intelligence, it's been thrown around quite a lot lately, and there are a lot of misconceptions about exactly what it is and what it isn't. So for those in our audience who may be wondering, what exactly do we mean when we say artificial intelligence? What are we talking about?
That is a great question. First thing I like to say when I'm talking about what is AI is to let folks know that artificial intelligence is not a new term. It's actually a term that was coined in the 50s. By a group of computer scientists who had a meeting and said over the summer, we're going to develop an artificial intelligence system that can mimic the human brain. And they set out to do this, I think, in 1955, and the term was coined then. And of course, that goal was not achieved, but it kicked off a particular branch of study in computer science, looking at basically advanced computing. And that's the other thing I like to note. AI is they're computers. It's a It's a phrase meant to describe computers that can act on their own to a degree and mimic human behavior or tasks. And one other thing I also like to say is, you know, often AI, once we get used to it, it just becomes using a computer. So autocorrect that we use in our sending text messages, I use that frequently. That was at one point cutting edge AI research. Software to play chess was cutting edge AI research. Video game characters are some form of AI. And the reason we're talking about it now, Loman, it's become such a hot topic because in late 2023, I believe it was, when OpenAI launched ChatGPT 3.5, this was a dialogue system that really surprised everyone in its abilities to craft sentences, to interact with users in a way that was closer kind of than ever before in using human language. And that kicked off kind of the fury and investments, the millions, billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, frankly, invested in data center development and software development. It got policymakers' attention from around the world. And because everyone saw what happened with OpenAI in 2023 and said, wow, this has huge implications. And it kind of brought AI back to the center of attention. But this is the latest iteration in a 70-year process, learning process and development process that we all use every day and have benefit from every day.
So it is something that should not be feared, right, Taylor? It has a lot of practical applications that we're actually already seeing, whether we realize it or not.
That's absolutely true. I mean, if any of your listeners use a Maps app, Google Maps, Waze, Apple Maps, to maybe find directions to the nearest bakery or Target, for instance, that is a form of AI software to navigate the best route or around traffic. It's pulling in all sorts of data. It's making the optimum decision for you. You know, I use Waze. Sometimes it gives me options and I can pick, but I'm relying on that AI system to route me around traffic or to find the best directions. You know, think of Netflix recommendation software. It's seeing what I and my wife are watching and then making recommendations for new TV shows or movies. That is an AI system. And yes, it's something we use every day, often just intuitively without knowing it. And it's been helpful in so many different ways for so many different people. And these kind of the advances in AI systems promise to deliver even more benefits to us.
And so these AI systems, Taylor, require a lot of advanced computing. They require server farms, data centers, if you will. And here in Pennsylvania, it looks like we are on cue to have a number of those developed in the Commonwealth. There are concerns, however, as to whether or not government, both state and federal, as well as even local governments, are going to get in the way. But at the federal level, you've been tracking some legislation that has been proposed by our friend Senator Ted Cruz that would create a so-called regulatory sandbox, all designed to ease this development. Can you talk a bit about the particulars of what Senator Cruz is proposing?
Senator Cruz, he's the chair of the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, the key committee in the Senate with jurisdiction over regulating and tracking AI and so many other digital economy sectors. And he introduced the Sandbox Act recently. And this bill is meant to basically streamline regulatory approval for new and innovative AI systems. And, you know, I'll note too for your listeners, you know, the word sandbox, like we're not talking about I have a sandbox out in our backyard for our kids. It's kind of a fun word that is meant to describe this kind of a different way of going about regulating different sectors of the economy. There are sandbox frameworks all around the country, all around the world. I think 50 countries have them in operation now. Many of them are in the U.S., in the states. And it's a method to clear away the regulatory thicket for typically new innovations. I think the first one in the U.S. was a fintech sandbox in Arizona. And what these do, it basically allows a company, so in the case of the Senator Cruz's bill, an AI company will go to the Office of Science and Technology Policy in the White House and, as outlined in the bill, kind of say, hey, we have this new idea, but it's going to run up against these potential regulations. And rather than maybe risk getting sued out of existence or going through even costlier compliance, They're going to tell the Office of Science and Technology Policy, which is in the White House, saying, hey, we've got this great idea. Here's how it's going to benefit consumers and the economy. Here are the rules that we're going to run up against. And kind of in exchange for a quicker approval and deployment in the economy, we're going to give you all in the White House and then the relevant agencies, say, you know, the Food and Drug Administration, Health and Human Services, financial regulatory agencies, we're going to give you regular reports on what we're doing. We're going to give you access to our data. We're going to immediately report anytime there's any form of economic or consumer harm. And we're going to do this for 2 years. And then there's an opportunity that's outlined in the bill for companies to renew for, I think, up to 8 years beyond the original two, so 10 in total, potentially. And as we've seen in other sandboxes, this can incentivize new companies. Instead of looking at business owners do, they have to look at all the laws they'll have to comply with. And sometimes that can prevent innovations from coming to be. But this could be just another tool out there to really spur AI innovation. And the goals here are to grow jobs, to help consumers, to grow the economy, and always with an eye towards safety as well. So there's this kind of sandboxes are like this exchange with the government that companies can enter into. And that's what this bill has been introduced and, of course, needs to go through the process in Congress before it becomes law. But, you know, I'll close here, too, with this proposal for a sandbox is actually something President Trump outlined in his AI action plan released this summer. And it's something we support as well in our recommendation to the White House as they're crafting their AI action plan. So we're big fans of this approach and glad that the president is on board with it, too.
And, of course, none of these issues exist in a silo, Taylor. Also important that we have energy development to go along because these data centers, they require huge amounts of energy. So we have to develop our energy resources as well, don't we?
Absolutely. And here I like to say the answer is not constraining access to these data centers, you know, constraining access to electricity from these data centers. It's growing the pie for everyone, which we can totally do. We have the technology to do this. And it requires, for me, you know, it took me a bit to think about electricity and energy and really an abundance mindset, not having a fixed pie. You know, I was as trained as, you know, throughout childhood, like turn off the lights, conserve, that's the way forward. But we can really produce more electricity cheaper, cleaner, more abundantly. Getting back to what the chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission said in the middle of the 1900s, we could have energy that's too cheap to meter. And I think this moment where we're seeing these AI data centers consume and demand so much electricity, instead of saying, whoa, 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 let's limit development there, I think we should say, whoa, what in the regulatory thicket can we clear away that's preventing an abundant energy future? So that means if we're supplying energy and electricity to these data centers while simultaneously lowering electricity bills for residents in those areas, in those states, I mean, it's been great to see what's been happening in Pennsylvania. As outlined in the plan coming out of July's meeting with the president, the reopening of Three Mile Island, or I think it's called Crane Clean Energy right now, the nuclear power plant there. Pennsylvania is really leading the nation here and kind of demonstrating the governor's outlining, you know, demonstrating here's what we can do as a state to get like these senseless regulations out of the way so companies can come to the state, they can invest, and make more electricity and cheaper electricity for everyone.
Taylor Barkley is Director of Public Policy at the Abundance Institute. You've used that word abundance a couple of times here. Taylor, tell us a little bit about Abundance Institute and where can folks find you on the web?
It is indeed a favorite word of ours. The Abundance Institute, we're a think tank based in Utah with offices in Washington, D.C. We believe that technological progress has historically demonstrated so much benefit and good for humanity throughout history, but that the future can be even better if we allow it to be with good public policy decisions. And so that's what I spend my every day doing in AI policy and energy policy. And if folks want to learn more, they can visit us at Abundance Institute. We have a great YouTube channel as well. And actually just today we released a video that talks about the Crane Clean Energy Center there in Pennsylvania and the benefits that nuclear energy can bring. And that you can just search Abundance Institute on YouTube and listeners can find that. I'm on X at Taylor D. Barkley and happy to keep in touch with any of your listeners.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you for all of that. Taylor Barkley of the Abundance Institute. Taylor, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much, Lemon. This is fun.
September is Healthy Aging Month. To learn more about ways to stay healthy as we age, Joe Geiger turns the community benefit spotlight on Dr. Valerie Fuller, who is president of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Dr. Fuller, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
For our listeners, Dr. Valerie Fuller is the president of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners and very well qualified to address the topic, which is September being the Healthy Aging Month, which is pretty fortunate because my birthday is in September. So, Valerie, why don't you tell the listeners what the five core pillars are for healthy aging?
September is Healthy Aging Month, and it's really a reminder that these small, consistent steps can make a big difference as we grow older. And on September 7th, we actually also celebrate National Grandparents Day. So together, these remind us that aging is not just about adding years to your life, but also ensuring that those years are really meaningful and healthy and connected. And so the things that we like to think about are, one, your physical health, really the foundation of things. We also talk about the importance of mental and emotional health as we age. Social connection is another. Some healthy aging tips, what the science tells us about healthy aging, and then a focus on maintaining your safety and your independence as we grow older.
It sounds like a healthy balance for people who are aging. One looks as important as another, and it's kind of one of those things, I guess, that you have to have the balance of all five to be aging in a healthy way.
That's correct. And I'll start really with just the foundation, which we consider physical health. The importance of moving your body every day. We know that exercise is one of the best anti-aging medicines we have, and in most cases it's completely free. But staying active, doing things like eating well, and managing your chronic conditions is really essential.
I think what a lot of people who are experiencing the aging process get concerned when they hear pillars like this, because they think it's going to change their quality of life. And reality is, if they do, it'll change it in a positive way. But it's like, I don't want to lose how I eat because I get my quality of life from how I eat, and I don't want to give that up. So how do you get them started on these five core things in a way that makes them really want to do it?
That's a very valid point. I would stress that even small changes, things like a brisk walk or eating more fruits and vegetables or drinking more water, can improve your health and well-being. And when we talk about activity, there's some great research out there, but I'll talk about one recent study that showed that older adults who regularly participate in a community-based exercise program were able to actually slow and sometimes even, in some cases, even reverse declines in cardiovascular strength that we often see with aging. So you'll live longer and hopefully live better as well when you consider putting some of these foundations into your life.
What do you think the biggest incentive is? I mean, you just mentioned a real positive incentive to try to get this balance in your life. But what do you think is the most important of the five pillars that you listed?
I think focusing on physical health, and I would include mental and emotional health with general health altogether. Keeping your mind engaged, healthy aging is improved through things like exercise, but also includes keeping the mind sharp, reading or learning a new skill or practicing stress management. All of these work in synergy, and we know that mental health can affect our physical health, so exercising both your body and your mind is very beneficial.
With the cognitive stimulation, when I'm on Facebook, there's all these games that you can play to stay sharp. Are there any things like the games on your iPad recommended to keep you curious, to keep you stimulated?
Absolutely. And there's other things as well besides, you know, being on a device, reading, doing a new exercise like learning Tai Chi or yoga. We know that movement and activity generate serotonin in your brain, can help your mood improve. So you can also focus on things like mindfulness or learning a new hobby. All of these things can stimulate your brain.
Why is it that when we get to the point of aging, that's where we start hearing about all these things? Why don't we incorporate these kinds of things into our everyday living while we're still young and middle-aged?
And we should. And it's something that we can all aim for. Try to add some of these things into our lives. I think we've become more socially isolated, perhaps, with all the technology that we have in our lives. But we tend to hear it with older adults because we know that depression and anxiety is higher in this population. And I want to finish on this piece about the mental health, and if you are a person that is feeling depressed or anxious or have another mental health condition, please reach out to your nurse practitioner. They want to partner with you if you're struggling with any of these conditions.
Social engagement. There's all kinds of organizations out there that invite elderly people to come and play bingo and square dance and all those kinds of things. Do you have something in mind that would be good advice for someone who's aging, who's missing these things?
As we age, we know that really building and maintaining these relationships is critically important. Developing connections with your grandchildren or younger people, some of these quote-unquote intergenerational connections, can really enhance your mental health. So spending time with your grandchildren and your children, if you have them, and if not, you know, there are great resources in the community. Think about a community center in your own town or city. They may have activities where you can remain socially connected. It does protect against loneliness, and it does protect your brain health. So it is important to stay socially connected where you can.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Dr. Valerie Fuller, the president of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. When you get to the stage where you recognize that you're aging, in terms of social engagement, how do you keep yourself vibrant and young to interact with the younger generation? I don't want to visit grandpa anymore because he has stinky feet, or I don't want to get involved with physical activity because it'll just slow me down, that kind of stuff. How do you get the aging to engage in these core pillars?
That's an excellent question. And I think understanding that both the younger and the older generation will benefit from these connections. And I think the better you get to know, perhaps, say, your grandparent, a younger person learns very important lessons in aging and hearing the stories of their grandparents. And the older adult also gains a sense of pride and value in being a mentor to these. And so developing those relationships and putting work into it. I mean, obviously, it's work, but it is very beneficial when we have these intergenerational connections. And I'll just pull back in Grandparents' Day here. The theme this year of Grandparents' Day is sharing a meal or being over a table and talking about things, perhaps sharing a meal together, perhaps sharing recipes, hearing stories, et cetera. And I think that's a really meaningful way to celebrate Grandparents' Day. And their theme is called Stories from the Table, but really does celebrate these intergenerational connections.
So Dr. Fuller, if somebody listening to the program would like more information or have questions for you, how can they find you?
www.aanp.org or npfinder.com. You can find nurse practitioners there as well. You can find me, you can find others. And again, yeah, we want to partner with you and be that coach and help you live the best life you can for as long as you can.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Dr. Valerie Fuller, the president of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. Dr. Fuller, I really appreciate you being a guest on our program today. Thank you.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Pennsylvania's state budget is now almost 3 months overdue, and the federal government is once again going to miss its October 1st budget deadline. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania offers some ideas for budgeting reform on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Before we begin, I want to take a moment to recognize the tragedy that unfolded last week, the loss of life and the loss of civil discourse. We continue to pray for Charlie, his wife, and his young family. As we approach another fiscal deadline, and as Harrisburg approaches 3 months past the deadline of our budget due date, the noise from both capitals has become familiar. Talk of an impending government shutdown fills the airwaves, and citizens across our Commonwealth are left to wonder whether their leaders will govern responsibly, or whether, once again, political brinkmanship will take precedence over the people's business. Shutdowns are not just political theater. They are costly failures of governance. AFP Chief Government Affairs Officer Brent Gardner puts it eloquently, "Shutdown politics are the worst kind of politics because American taxpayers always lose." It's time for Washington to do the right thing and take this important step towards breaking free from crisis to crisis policymaking. That's why AFP Pennsylvania is bringing forth common sense solutions to better budgeting. In Washington, the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act offers a common sense reform. Instead of allowing government funding to lapse and grinding everything to a halt, this act would automatically continue funding at current levels until lawmakers reach a budget agreement. That means no more shutdown crises holding families hostage to politics. But it doesn't just, quote, kick the can down the road. It creates accountability. Lawmakers would have to stay in Washington, with floor debates and committee work continuing until the job gets done. The incentive flips. Instead of shutdowns being a bargaining chip, they become a mark of failure that no one can escape. Here in Harrisburg, the Responsible Budgeting Act offers a similar step forward. Pennsylvania's budgeting process has been plagued for years by delayed budgets and partisan stalemates. The Responsible Budgeting Act, introduced by Representative Tom Jones, would require lawmakers to prioritize sustainable spending by tying growth of state government to the growth of our economy. That means government can grow, but only at a pace families and businesses can afford. It would also encourage lawmakers to set aside reserves in good times so we're better prepared in downturns, exactly the kind of discipline every household and business must practice. These two proposals, one in Washington, one in Harrisburg, share a common philosophy. Government should be predictable, sustainable, and accountable to the people it serves. No more governing by crisis. No more stop-and-go politics that undermine confidence in our institutions. Instead, a budgeting process that rewards foresight, stability, and responsibility. We should be clear. Shutdowns don't save money. They waste it. As Kurt Couchman, Senior Policy Fellow on Fiscal Reform, says, the looming threat of a government shutdown and the blame game that follows pushes members to vote for bills that they would never support under normal circumstances. This is a manufactured political crisis that almost always results in bad policy. Pennsylvanians understand this intuitively. Every family must live within a budget. Every small business must plan for ups and downs. They don't get to shut down their operations when times are tough. They make trade-offs, they prioritize, they plan. It's time government lived by the same rules. As we head towards yet another potential shutdown, and as our state government fails to come to an agreement on our annual budget, both Harrisburg and Washington have an opportunity to prove they can learn from past failures. Passing the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act at the federal level and the Responsible Budgeting Act at the state level would be a declaration that government will finally start working the way it should. On time, on budget, and with respect for the people footing the bill. Because at the end of the day, government shutdowns and delayed annual budgets don't punish politicians. They punish the people. And Pennsylvanians deserve better than to be used as pawns in a never-ending budget chess match. It's time to end the shutdown game once and for all and put responsible budgeting back at the heart of governing. Sign your name to a petition urging your elected leadership to get to work on meaningful budgeting reform. Head to AmericansForProsperity.org to learn more. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRSC-FM in Bellefonte, WCRO-AM in Johnstown, along with WHYL-FM in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Frederick W. Anton III Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.